What is the most important e-discovery issue today?
Cost control?
Technology-assisted review?
Information management?
Preservation?
From the latest cases to the newest technologies.
Our goal is to expose legal professionals to the most important e-discovery trends
with the brightest e-discovery experts.
Rulemaking,
predictive coding,
litigation hold,
proportionality,
document review,
social media,
efficiency,
ethics,
cooperation.
Welcome to the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll On Track, an e-discovery software and service provider. You are listening to the Legal Talk Network.
Hi, I'm Michelle Lang, and welcome to the ESI Report. Over the last couple of weeks, we have been working to bring a facelift to the show format. As always, it is our goal to provide you with compelling, interesting, and relevant e-discovery interviews. And we're also going to infuse some fun into the show near the end. But let's get started with the new ESI report. Today's topic is the CARM, or perhaps better spelled out, the Computer-Assisted Review Reference Model. And today, joining me, I have two of the people here that helped develop the CARM. First, George Socha, chief guru of the EDRM. And second, Tom Palladino, president of Night Owl, a company that provides e-discovery management services. You know, I'd have to say that today's show is unique in that our guests, along with myself, are all based in Minnesota today. And even though we are all in the same state, we're not in the same building. So let's get Tom and George on the phone and get started with all the ESI buzz, where we will discuss the hottest e-discovery topics and the most thought-provoking legal technology questions. George Socha, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
And Tom Palladino, welcome to the ESI Report.
Glad to be here, Michelle.
So, George, why don't you start us off with a description of what is the CARM and when you launched it and why EDRM participants thought it was time now to develop such a model?
Well, the CARM is, we hope, more than just a pretty picture. But importantly, it is a picture. It's intended to be a reference model. So by that, we mean a starting point for discussions when people need to talk about computer-assisted review or technology-assisted review or predictive coding or whatever you want to call it. And the idea is that we have in one diagram a consensus view of the major steps in the computer-assisted review process. And the way we arrived at these major steps was that our participating member organizations, who between them represent most, not quite all, but most of the computer-assisted review models or tools out there, looked at what they had to offer, looked at the similarities, looked at the differences, tried to figure out the areas of overlap so that people could look then at this diagram and ask themselves, what are the major pieces? How do we break this down so that we can talk about this in a more meaningful fashion? We launched it just this last year. I think we put the diagram up maybe 6 months ago, maybe less than that, probably closer to 5 or 4 months ago. And we did it for just the reasons I was talking about, because our participants, organizations, and individuals felt that the time had come to try to put forth one reference model that people could use as a starting point for discussions so that they could compare and contrast the different techniques and the different tools available today and into the future under this broad rubric of CARM.
So, Tom, tell me a little bit about your organization's involvement in the EDRM and specifically in the creation of the CARM model.
Great, yeah. Night Owl Discovery has supported EDRM for a long time. We think it's a great group. George and I are in town here, and I have the pleasure of occasionally, bending George's ear on matters of e-discovery, and he's a great resource. So we always have had a lot of respect and admiration for the group. I was able to make some time to participate in the last couple of years, which has been fantastic. So I'm part of the EDRM search group. And for anybody who's not been to a meeting, you know, one of these EDRM meetings, these working groups really do require work. You know, you're in a room with a lot of really bright people, a lot of people a lot brighter than I am. And there's a lot of ideas. It's very collegiate, very collaborative environment. And one of the reasons EDRM search was a topic that I was so interested in was because all the technology-assisted review or computer-assisted review was going to be put into that group. And I really think this is an exciting part of, you know, what's going on in the industry. So after we spent an entire day deciding about the acronym CARM, we actually moved on to working on the model. But it was... Really, again, a really interesting exercise, and I think all of us agreed that EDRM does a great job with reference models, and at least for my part, I'm really happy with where that model is today and how many ideas got baked into it. I think there'll be a lot more good stuff to come out of this group surrounding CARM, you know, over the next year, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
So, George, what has some of the feedback been since you launched the CARM?
Well, before I answer the question you asked, I'm going to answer the question you did not ask, but that Tom brought up. For anybody who is interested in helping with the ongoing development of the CARM model or our other EDRM activities, our next meeting is May 8th and 9th here in the Twin Cities, of course, in St. Paul. Information on the website. But now back to the question you asked. The response has been very positive. Folks have said that they feel this does help break things out into steps they can deal with as more bite-sized chunks and work with, and they say it resonates. It feels right to them, and that's what we're hoping for. Because a diagram like this, if it's going to be effective, should reflect where people are at and where they are going, and not offer to them something that is in sharp contrast to their experiences. And if they came back and said, you know, this is really a different way of looking at it, we probably would have failed in our task. The feedback, though, that we've gotten has been quite positive.
So, Tom, to build upon what George was talking about with some of the experiences of clients and service providers out there with this technology, do you want to talk a little bit about how some of your clients are embracing computer-assisted review and some of the experiences and benefits you've seen in perhaps working with that technology?
Yeah. So let me first say that there is a really wide spectrum of computer-assisted review, and I think that in terms of people embracing that, almost anybody on a fairly large case or even a medium-sized case will use some form of computer-assisted review. There's so much data today that it's pushing us to, you know, have innovative ways to deal with it, to categorize it, to understand, you know, what needs to be produced. So I think, you know, when you talk about the whole spectrum of computer-assisted, you know, review, we're all using it to some degree in the products that, you know, that are out there. But I do think if you talk about computer-assisted review in the sense of predictive coding or really using technology to help assist with understanding your document collection. I think every time I've used a flavor of computer-assisted review, the results have been positive. You know, I think overall adoption in the marketplace is slower than I would have expected, but I'm more oriented to technology than the law, so I'm not a JD. I'm kind of more of a tech. So I really see the power of this, and I do see wider adoption coming, you know, but I will tell you that my clients that do use it, and that's a wider and wider range of clients, you know, as we move into the future, I would say that every experience I've had with it has been positive. In every single case, I think that people will see cost savings. And I think this is easily, you know, this is easily sort of proved out in writing case studies. You know, they see cost savings, they'll see greater accuracy in terms of the decisions that are made, that combined decision making between what the computer can do and what people can do together. And I think that's really the key here, you know, is that there's a collaboration, you know, of people and computer here. Not, this isn't the computer just doing something. I think the reference model, CARM really shows that this is an interactive process with the legal team, you know, with people reviewing documents. And I also think that leads to better defensibility. People talk about sampling and statistics all the time in litigation, but I think it's rarely actually done. When you go through a computer-assisted review exercise, you are actually forced to make calculations, to have sampling, to have statistics. So I really see it as a positive right now. I think there's no turning back. I mean, this is a field that's going to continue to grow, and I think that the technologies that are out there today are very good, you know, and I think they'll just get better. So I think right now the story is an overwhelmingly positive one, even though there's some fear out there in the legal community about it. But I think people should have no fear about it. It's easy to understand, especially with a reference model like this. It helps break it down, and it's very, very beneficial.
So when you think, Tom, toward the future and toward adoption of this technology more on a broad scale, what does the future of document review look like? What do you see as the role for lawyers with regards to document review once this technology does become more mainstream?
Yeah, I think about that pretty often. You know, Night Owl is one of many providers that provide, you know, document review services. And I think the future looks great for that. For groups that can live in a world that's more sophisticated, you know, than linear review was in the past. So what you see in CARM is, and what you see in the reference model is that human input are the guides to the computer. They help the technology decide, you know, how to work with the documents. So it's a garbage in, garbage out, you know, system, as most systems are. It's very important to have discipline, but the role of attorneys is really critical. I mean, the decisions that they make are the ones being propagated in the system. And then I see very much off into the future, computer-assisted review being just that. This isn't computer review. It's not leave it to the computer review. It's that the computer's assisting a review team working in a smart workflow to get through documents faster, to get through them more accurately. So I really think this interaction of attorneys and legal teams with the systems will just solidify over time, and people will understand these workflows. There's definitely a role, you know. I would say that I see in the future the diminishment of you know, the sort of lowest cost you know, contract attorney linear review model, and something moving more towards you know, a smarter, smaller teams. Working, you know, in highly disciplined workflows with the technology that in an effective way. So it's you know, there continues to be more and more data, and it really does need to be reviewed. So I think that you know, I think we see the role of lawyers in document review still being a very strong one. But I really think it's, like, to use a cliche, it's a work smarter, not harder scenario that's to come.
Well, thank you both for that very interesting information about the CARM and the EDRM. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, e-discovery doesn't have to be serious all of the time. And if you're up for it, I'd like to play a couple rounds of what we're calling here arguably relevant, an e-discovery puzzler game. Are you guys up for some fun?
I'm up for it if Tom is.
I'm in, definitely.
All right. So as you both know, judges are known for writing clever and sometimes witty e-discovery opinions. And so what I'm going to do is read off a few snippets. One is a case quote that we made up here at the ESI Report, and one is a case quote from an actual e-discovery court opinion, a fairly notable or famous e-discovery court opinion. And what I want you both to do is jump in and see if you can identify the fake and see if you can identify the legit case quote.
So now, Michelle, I know you are setting us up so that neither Tom nor I will have a chance to have Carl Castle on our home answering machine.
This is a little bit similar to a very famous NPR show, and that's exactly what we're trying to do is have a little bit of fun. So let's see if you guys can get it. Here's the first case quote. By destroying his computer with a sledgehammer, the plaintiff's conduct was egregious enough to fortify his claims against the defendant. Thereby, the court finds this appropriate to hammer these claims with a dismissal. And the second case quote, this was a case of too many cooks spoiling the broth. The litigation was conducted in an Inspector Clouseau-like fashion. However, unlike a Pink Panther film, there was nothing amusing about this conduct. So one of those case quotes is real, and one of those is a fake. Any ideas?
I shudder to think that it might be the first.
I'm going to agree that it is not the first, even though, again, I'm not an attorney, so everything judges say is a complete mystery.
So you both think that the second one, you are absolutely right. The second one is the real opinion, the real statement from an opinion with the Inspector Clouseau and the Pink Panther. It was written by District Judge Cook in Coquina versus Rothstein, which was a case out of the Southern District of Florida in August of 2012. So a fairly recent e-discovery opinion written in, again, a sort of a witty way. Let's do another one. The first one. Imagine a stand-up comic who delivers the punchlines of his jokes first, or a plane with landing gear that deploys after touchdown. That's what document production after trial is like. It defeats the purpose. Or number two. Short of ordering a lobotomy, which of course this court cannot do, I strongly encourage the plaintiffs to forget these portions of the meeting notes and focus on documents that are discoverable. Any ideas? The first or the second?
Well, I've been in trials where documents have been produced almost up until the closing arguments, but I find it a little hard to figure out how someone's going to be trying to produce, well, documents after the case is over or the trial is over. I'll go with option B.
The lobotomy.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually say here, just only to make things interesting, and I should always generally agree with George, but I'll go with number one, just to try to create some separation.
And besides, Tom's going to be right anyway.
He is right. In fact, that's Judge Royce Lamberth, who's a fairly famous district court judge in DL versus District of Columbia back in May of 2011. He actually talked a little bit about a plane with landing gear and a stand-up comic with his punchlines after the jokes. So good job, Tom. All right, one more. Just one more, I promise. I'll only put you through the pain of one more. This one's also a little bit of fun to think which one of these witty quotes would a judge actually have come out of a real e-discovery opinion. The first one, American lawyers engaged in discovery have never been accused of asking for too little. To the contrary, like the Rolling Stones, they hope that if they ask for what they want, they will get what they need. Or quote number two, counsel could have included Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. Both would have been as about useful as the information listed on the plaintiff's privilege log. A reference to Rolling Stones or a reference to Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck? Any ideas as to which is real and which is fake?
I don't know. The first one sounds like Judge Facciola and the second one like Paul Grimm. This is hard to choose here.
You know what, Tom? Any thoughts?
Geez, I'm going to go with the Rolling Stones just because why not?
You know what, George? Your intuition is perfect. The first one is Judge Facciola. The second is not Judge Grimm. The second was made up by producers here at the ESI Report. But the first one comes out of Judge Facciola's opinion in McPeak versus Ashcroft way back in 2001 when we were started talking about e-discovery issues almost more than a decade ago. Well, thank you guys for humoring us. Good job on getting the case quiz. I appreciate it. And just like judges are in writing their e-discovery opinions, we aim to bring a little bit of levity to the conversation on the ESI Report. And so I thank you both, not only for that, but also for your time and expertise today. George Socha of the EDRM, thank you for lending your expertise to our listeners.
Well, Michelle, I have to ask, will we then have your voice on our home answering machines?
You can have my voice on your answering machines anytime.
Thank you very much.
Tom Palladino, president of Night Owl, thanks for your valuable time.
Thank you so much for having me today. That was fun.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the ESI Report, and thank you for the Kroll On Track for sponsoring another edition. If you would like to see the quotes we used for the arguably relevant portion of the show today, log on to www.theediscoveryblog.com, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Michelle C.S. Lang. Until next time, I'm Michelle Lang, signing off for another edition of the ESI Report.
Thanks for listening to the ESI Report, produced by the broadcast professionals at Legal Talk Network. Join Michelle Lang for her next podcast on the latest e-discovery trends. Subscribe to the RSS feed on LegalTalkNetwork.com or in iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.